in here. Oh, it's working. That bit's working now. I can talk to the rest of you now. Good morning, everybody. So we're looking at this theme of the miraculous and the mundane. And we're seeing that God is present with us no matter what we feel or what's happening in our lives. And that there are times and seasons for everything. That God works in both miraculous ways, but also through apparently ordinary, mundane events. And we need eyes to see him and to perceive what he's doing, you know, whatever method he uses. In Ecclesiastes, we read, there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. Now, we've already talked a lot about the miracle of creation, nature, the world that we see around us. And nowhere do we see that more plainly than in the seasons, the natural seasons that God has ordained. Just go back, Gary. You're running ahead of me. And I want to look, you know, at our natural seasons, but also the seasons of the soul, the seasons that we go through in our lives, to explore how God's with us and how he works in us and through us in both miraculous and mundane ways. So, as we saw there, we've got a picture of the seasons, the four seasons, spring, summer, autumn, and winter. They're part of God's creation. In some places, there's not much change between the seasons. In some countries, they just have a wet season and a dry season. Different variations. But certainly in our country, we have these different seasons, and there are variations in each one of them. There are clear differences, you know, between spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And that's something that God's ordained. After the flood, God promised Noah that as long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, will never cease. That was God's promise. And it's worth, you know, remembering that promise. It's reassuring for us at a time when we're bombarded daily with negative news about the weather and climate change, and there's this sense of doom and negativity thrust at us daily in the media. But we've got God's promise that the seasons, with their regularity and their purpose, seed time and harvest, with their different temperatures, cold and hot heat, with their cycle of day and night, they will never cease as long as the earth endures. And therefore, we've got stability and we've got hope at all times. And that stability and hope ultimately come from God and from his faithfulness, the faithfulness that we associate with him and with his promises. As the writer to the Hebrews tells us, he who promised is faithful. You know, the world is sustained by God's powerful word, another everyday miracle that we just take for granted so often. In the natural world, we can see different things about each season to appreciate. Spring, for example, has got the promise of renewal and growth. The buds grow again, flowers bloom after the winter months. There's that sense of new life, new hope. We see that particularly perhaps in Song of Songs, chapter 2, verses 11 to 13, when it says, "See, the winter is past. The rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. The fig tree forms its early fruit. The blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me." And most of us, I think, like the promise of spring. I love daffodils. I love seeing those spring flowers. You know, the snowdrops, first of all, when it's still cold, and then the daffodils and crocuses and tulips, the flowers of spring. We get more daylight in spring. And then, of course, we've got summer. You know, the hours of daylight increase, warmer temperatures. There's lots of colour around. Often we associate summer with school holidays and going on holiday. So, you know, the ice creams, the beach, you know. Some of us find it too hot, maybe, but there's something quite liberating about not having to wear all those layers of clothes that you have to wear in winter and so on. There's usually a sense of hope and joy throughout the summer months. Then we've got autumn with its harvest, the riotous colours as the leaves change, and fall off the trees. You know, and it's a season of hard work, autumn, bringing with it the prospect of preparation. We know that winter's coming. And for many people, you know, it's a favourite season because of this sort of colour and mildness, and there's this sense of anticipation, you know, perhaps a greater sense of urgency, maybe perhaps a little weariness from all that extra work. Winter is that season where nothing seems to grow. Temperatures fall, darkness seems to predominate. You know, we often feel that winter's barren and lonely. It's a long season without much hope. And it can seem as though it's going to last forever. Many people really do feel depressed and sad, you know, as they're affected by the weather and the moods all around them. Seasons have this capacity to affect our moods. We were just talking in the car coming that, you know, we feel better when it's a bright, sunny day, even if it's cold, than when it's all overcast and dank and drizzly and, you know, we don't really like that very much. But what we learn from the seasons, apart from the sheer variety and creativity of God, is that there's, you know, there's consistency built into our world in this variety. Because seasons change, we're not in control of them, nothing's permanent, but there is a regularity and a consistency to them, which is quite reassuring, I think. You know, no matter what we do, we can't stop the passage of time, and so we've got to learn to adapt and go with the flow. You know, seasons may not always make sense to us. We might, you know, have that sense of awe and appreciation. I'm sure all of us have, you know, marveled at a glorious sunrise or sunset, or we've taken photos like this one, you know, of the pristine white snow. But I'm sure we've all shivered, you know, in the bitingly cold winds, or wondered, you know, why we have to have torrential downpours at inconvenient times. I can almost guarantee that if it's going to rain, it's going to rain between 8 and 9 o'clock when the kids are going to school, or about, you know, 2:45 to 3:15 when they're coming home and you're going to pick them up. It just seems to absolutely pour with rain for 10-15 minutes and then stop, you know. So seasons require us to change. You know, we can't wear our summer clothes in winter. We can't necessarily do the same things at the same time. You know, maybe it's too dark to do things outdoors in winter, unless you've got plenty of artificial light. So there's a lot that we can learn from the seasons in the natural world that we can apply to our spiritual lives as well. And just as there are these natural seasons that we can't change, but we've got to learn to appreciate and adapt to, there are spiritual seasons in our lives too. We call them seasons of the soul. And sometimes, you know, God feels so close and so real to us that it's like basking in the warm sunshine on a beach. But sometimes he feels strangely absent. And sometimes the heavens feel like brass. It's like being out in a blizzard in winter with nothing to look forward to. A song that I first heard when I became a Christian back in the 1980s is called Seasons of the Soul. And the writers say, so when you look for the voice that you've known and no one's there, and when it seems the caretaker's heart just doesn't care, it's the season of the soul. You know, just as winter in this natural world can seem bleak and uninviting, can seem barren and boring, winter as a season of the soul can be painful, difficult to navigate. We feel as though we're never going to be fruitful again. We feel that God is a distant memory. And then, you know, we have spring and autumn, times when we can feel the promise of new life, when we sense that God's at work, we're filled with optimism and hope. There are times when we can see that there's a harvest to bring in. We're called to work hard, but we've got that sense of anticipation. We've got positive vibes that come with seeing what we've longed for. You know, harvest time is hard work, but farmers are filled with gladness that their hard work is paying off. And that can be the same for us spiritually. But one thing that we've got to admit is that not every season is enjoyable or comfortable. I'm sure most of us would like to live in a permanent season of celebration or fruitfulness or growth. But just as we've got to live through winter in the natural world, we may well have to experience seasons of the soul that are tough and difficult to endure. And we don't like not being able to see the connection between what we're doing today and what happens in our lives tomorrow. We want life to make sense, but we've got limited information, understanding, and perspective sometimes. And so those periods can seem burdensome and heavy to us. How do we navigate those difficult seasons then? How do we remain true to God and find Him true to us every day of our lives, not just in those lovely days of summer? Now, how do we find His miraculous presence in winter? How do we live with faith, hope, and love in the everyday? Well, I would suggest that there are three P's that can help us to appreciate and to live through the different seasons of the soul. And I've called those perspective, patience, and perseverance. Because the first thing we need to live with is perspective. Again, in this song, it says, whenever summer dreams start to fade and lose their light, and when the spring in your heart seems so cold, it can't be right, and you feel like you've lost control, and the valley seems so low, well, it's not forever. It's just a season of the soul. You know, knowing that our present season, our present situation isn't forever is vital to carrying on, to enduring. Because it often feels like we'll never rejoice again when we're in that season of barrenness or bereavement. It feels like there'll never be an end to the tedium of changing nappies when you're a new mum. Yeah? There'll never be an end to listening to squabbling children when you're a parent. There'll never be an end to caring for an elderly relative who no longer remembers who you are, who they are, let alone who you are. You know, it feels like there'll just never be an end to the pain, to that ache inside you, which is all you can feel. And sometimes it's not even because there's any crisis that you're facing. It's just that sense of loneliness or alienation or a feeling of dryness, a spiritual barrenness that means you just feel like you can't hear God or see Him anymore. Your life feels meaningless and pointless. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4, inwardly we're wasting away. Sorry, outwardly we're wasting away, but inwardly we're being renewed day by day. And he says, our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. What is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. When you're in a dark season, your troubles don't seem light or momentary at all. You feel crushed, you feel broken, you feel defeated, and you feel it's never going to be any different. But Paul says, fix your eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. The here and now, however exciting it is, however boring it is, however painful it is temporary. What we cannot see with our natural eyes is what is eternal. So we've got to learn to live with that eternal perspective. And that's why reading the Bible and prayer and fellowship are so important to our spiritual health. Because without those things, we're just at the whim of how we feel. We're tossed, we're blown about like the waves of the wind, James says. You know, we're at the whim of any thought that comes to us, either from the world or from our own minds or from the enemy. You know, Paul describes it in this way in Ephesians. We're tossed back and forth by the waves. We're blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. That is what life without perspective looks like. And it's utterly exhausting. We've got to be anchored to truth so that we can take on life with all its vicissitudes, all its setbacks, all its disappointments, heartbreak and confusion. And we've got to see those things from the light of eternity. No matter how dry or barren or futile your life might seem now, you can have the perspective that God is working for good in everything, in all of it. The seasons remind us that even though there's nothing productive apparently about winter, spring follows and then there's hope. And what's true in the natural world is true in the spiritual world too. You know, perspective is living with God's viewpoint in life, seeing things the way that He sees them, rather than relying on natural eyesight. We sing in the song, Plans, help us see the world through your eyes. And Paul says that God has raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus. So that means we've got the ability to see things differently if we'll choose to live by faith and not by sight. Whatever the season, however we feel, we've got to remain tethered to truth. We've got to know truth in order to be set free by it. It means that we've got to accept that no matter how long a season may feel, it won't last forever. You know, the natural world has set dates for seasons, even though the weather doesn't always seem to realize that and follow those dates, you know. But having those set dates gives us purpose and hope. It will not always be like this. And the second thing that we need, if we're going to find God in those difficult seasons in life, and if life just seems very mundane, is to learn to live with patience. You know, waiting for God is not easy. Michael Card says in his song that waiting is the most bitter lesson a believing heart has to learn. And most of us, if we're honest, will say we don't find it easy to wait for the Lord, and that's probably why there are so many Bible verses about it. I've got three here. Psalm 27, verse 14. Wait for the Lord, be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. Psalm 33, verse 20. We wait in hope for the Lord. He is our help and our shield. And Psalm 37, verse 7. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. I think waiting, I found encouragement from the natural world in the idea of waiting. In particular, this idea of crop rotation and fallow land. Now, people are often surprised to find that those ideas are actually in the Bible. In Leviticus 25, verses 1 to 7, it says, "The Lord said to Moses at Mount Sinai, 'Speak to the Israelites and say to them, when you enter the land I am going to give you, the land itself must observe a Sabbath to the Lord. For 6 years sow your fields, and for 6 years prune your vineyards and gather their crops. But in the seventh year the land is to take a year of Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the grapes of your untended vines. The land is to have a year of rest. Whatever the land yields during the Sabbath year will be food for you, for yourself, your male and female servants, and the hired worker and the temporary resident who live among you, as well as for your livestock and the wild animals in your land. Whatever the land produces may be eaten." So this principle of crop rotation and leaving land fallow for a year or more is to help soil to be replenished. You know, fallow land is ploughed and harrowed, but then it's left without being sown in order to restore its fertility or to avoid surplus production. Land that you would assume should be growing crops is allowed to lie idle during the growing season. And that might seem crazy to us. You know, surely you've got to use every scrap of land that you've got, and you've got to grow crops all the time. But the goal of fallowing in the natural realm is to allow the land to recover, to store organic matter while retaining moisture, to disrupt the pest life cycles and the soil-borne pathogens by temporarily removing their hosts. So there's good scientific reasons why, you know, you should leave land fallow. The land actually becomes more productive for this apparent period of inactivity and idleness. And waiting for God often seems to us pointless and a waste of time. We're aware, you know, that we're supposed to be numbering our days aright. We're aware that there's urgency to the Great Commission that God's given us. So why does God give us seasons when nothing seems to be happening and there's nothing we can do but wait for him? It seems counterintuitive to us, you know, just as the whole idea of fallowing doesn't seem to make sense. How can there be growth from periods when God doesn't seem to be doing anything, or our lives just seem to be trapped in this mundane routine? But just as in the natural world, the soil is actually getting refreshed and restored through the period when nothing's happening and no crops are growing, our souls can actually be strengthened spiritually by the necessity of waiting for God. Because we learn dependence on him at that time. We learn to lean on him in those seasons. Our hearts may be confused, they may be discouraged, but patience teaches us to trust God more than what we see or feel. And those are valuable faith lessons. There are ways that God grows our faith. You know, we learn ultimately, it's not so much about us and what we can do. The miraculous is about who God is and what God can do. You know, circumstances might have stolen busyness from you, or purpose, or health, or ability, but that's not the whole story. It's not the end of the story. The fallow land is only temporarily idle. We may be in a season when we feel we can't do what we want to do, or we can't see where God is leading us, but he will make a straight path for us in due course. And the third P, closely allied to patience, is perseverance. I think perseverance, if I had to give a definition, would be patience plus. Yeah? You have Disney Plus and all these extra channels, don't you? You know, perseverance to me is patience plus. And, you know, if we persevere, James says, we will be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Now, I think lots of us fail to move from the mundane to the miraculous because we just give up. It's just too difficult. We lack stamina, we lack perspective, we lack patience, we lack stickability. We're like the child who wants to take up a particular hobby and then gives it up a few weeks later because they discover it's actually not that easy to learn to play an instrument or to learn to swim or to master anything in just a few weeks with no effort whatsoever. Perseverance is the key that unlocks so much in our lives. You know, as parents, we encourage our children to keep trying even when the child doesn't want to, probably especially when the child doesn't want to. Yeah, we may have to force them to keep trying, refusing to give up on those lessons. You know, when Esther started swimming lessons, she was just turned one. And the first week she went with Stephen because he was still off for the Christmas holidays. And she loved it. She loved being in the water. She had a great time until the end when they asked them to sort of wet their faces. She didn't like that very much. I took her the next week. She cried for 30 minutes solid, screaming and sobbing that she didn't want to go in the water. She didn't want to be in the water. And that carried on for another 3 weeks till I was at the end of my tether and seriously considering giving up these swimming lessons because she must be too young for it. And then on the next week, she just went in and that was fine. Bright as rain. She never cried again at going to a swimming lesson. You know, it was an object lesson for me in perseverance. It would have been much easier to give up. But through, you know, this dogged perseverance, she grew to love being in the water. She learned to swim. It took 4 years for her to be able to swim without armbands. 4 years of weekly lessons. You know, sometimes we felt that she's never going to do it. But perseverance paid off. And now she can swim. Now she loves it. She just can do it. What was all the fuss about? What was all the problem? You know, well, perseverance is that golden key. It unlocks so much spiritually as well as in the natural world. You've got to be persevering if you want to be mature and complete. There is no other way. There are no shortcuts. No matter how gifted you are, no matter how much natural talent you've got, no matter how much spiritual sensitivity you possess, you will need perseverance to navigate the seasons of the soul well. And how do we learn to persevere? Well, often we need reasons, don't we, or incentives to persevere. For Esther, persevering at swimming was helped by the structure of the lessons and getting rewards for doing little things, getting badges, getting certificates, all that kind of stuff. We're told that Moses persevered because he saw him who is invisible. So in other words, that perspective we've been talking about, knowing the reality of God, having experienced the presence and power of God in the past, that gave him a reason, an incentive to carry on, even when there was much opposition, when there was difficulty. Whatever season of the soul you feel you're in right now, God is with you. Paul reminds the Philippians that he's confident that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. With perspective and with patience and perseverance, we can live through every season of the soul, and we can know the joy of meeting the Lord face to face one day and being welcomed into his presence. We're not to give up. The song that I've quoted and that I'll put up on the website afterwards for you to listen to if you want to, Seasons of the Soul, it lasts for almost 7 minutes. Now, 7 minutes is a long time for a popular song. Yeah, and it has an instrumental introduction that lasts 2 minutes and 10 seconds before any of the lyrics are sung. And I used to wonder why that was so. But I actually think that that's a parable in itself. It reminds us that waiting is a valuable part of the seasons of the soul. The God who made night and day gives us 8 hours of apparent inactivity every single day as a reminder that he's in control, not us. In this life, it's not forever. It's just a season of the soul. Life is a preparation for eternity. God is with us in both the miraculous and the mundane.